It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The new Vietnam War documentary series on IPTV, directed by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, has reopened a national conversation about that long, controversial conflict. This hour, we've invited Iowa veterans of Vietnam into our studios to give us their reactions to the series and the relevance it may have for us now, more than 40 years after the fall of Saigon. Are you a veteran of Vietnam? What's your takeaway from the documentary series? Join our conversation. First, this hour's news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, if you're like me, over the past couple of weeks, you've caught the buzz about this new Vietnam War documentary series, the 18-hour documentary series in 10 parts, directed by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, featuring testimony from nearly 100 witnesses. You can still watch it. In fact, it's at iptv.org. It will be re-airing on a weekly basis through the end of November. You'll have to look for the local listings to find it. An amazing documentary series on the Vietnam War. It has reopened a national conversation about that long, controversial conflict. And we are so grateful to have four veterans in our studio today to give us their reaction alongside their experiences in Vietnam and what we may have learned about it and the value of this documentary 40 years after the fall of Saigon. Reaching out to Vietnam veterans, especially this hour, if you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100 with your reaction to the Ken Burns, Lynn Novick Vietnam War documentary series. 1-866-780-9100. Joining us in our Des Moines studio, Lieutenant Dan Gannon, chair of the Iowa Commission of Veterans Affairs. He's been with us before, served as a Marine Corps infantry platoon commander in Vietnam, now calls Ankeny his home. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Welcome to you, too.
Also in Des Moines, Roger Elliott, retired Master Sergeant, served in Vietnam from 68 to 70, a Des Moines resident. Roger, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And our third veteran in Des Moines, Ron Langle, is the commissioner at the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs, served in Vietnam in the U.S. Army. He's a sergeant for 13 months. Ron Langle, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And in Iowa City, Joe Gasparetti is with us. He served in the U.S. Army with the 4th Infantry Division in Vietnam in 66 and 67, now lives in Iowa City. Joe, welcome to you.
Ben, thanks so much for doing this, and I can't see you fellas, but the watchword today is welcome home, right?
Yes, you got it.
Thank you very much.
And another word to say is, gentlemen, at the beginning, of course, thank you so much for your service, the appreciation of which we will gain more respect for as we learn more about Vietnam this hour. Let's just go through and talk about a little bit about your experience and how it lines up with what you saw in this film. Dan Gannon, start us off here. Your experience, as you've shared on this program before, you got into the war, you had a brother severely wounded, you wanted to avenge that, you signed up, you became a commander.
Yes, that's such. Graduated from Iowa State, was going to get drafted, then I signed up for the Marine Officer School at Quantico, and then I went to Vietnam as an infantry platoon leader.
Mm-hmm. When you watched this film, what was it like, this series?
Well, I thought it was long. That's a lot of Vietnam, and it brings back a lot of memories, some good, not so good, but I think it was overall a good. I think it portrayed or let a lot of people know what the Vietnam experience was about, but a lot of it has to do with what your role was in Vietnam, what your MOS was.
Mm-hmm. And for you, as a commander, you were right in the thick of it. nighttime, daytime. Is that the part of the film that the series that resonated with you? What it was like to be on the ground in the infantry?
Yes, I'm not sure which episode it was, but there was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps that a lot of his comments were the same comments that I have said many, many times in various talks about an experience in Vietnam as an infantry platoon leader.
I think I have a bit of audio from that part of the is this a Marine remembering being afraid, perhaps mirroring your experience to some degree, Dan, when assigned to a listening post at night. This is from the documentary series John Musgrave here, a Marine in Vietnam in 1967. Let's listen.
I was assigned a listening post at Con Tien in the fall. That was like getting a death sentence at a trial, because that's just three Marines out there with a radio. And that's the scariest thing I did. You're listening for the enemy. They call you on the radio every hour. Delta Lima Papa 3 Bravo, Delta Lima Papa 3 Bravo, this is Delta 3. If your sit rep is Alpha Sierra, key your handset twice. If your situation report is all secure, break squelch twice on the handset. And if it's not, they keep thinking you're asleep, so they keep asking you if your sit rep is Alpha Sierra, and then it finally dawns on them, maybe there's somebody too close for you to say anything. So then they say, if your sit rep is negative Alpha Sierra, key your handset once, and you damn near squeeze the handle off the, you know, and two on the radio, because they're so close that you can hear them whispering to one another. And that's scary stuff. That's real scary stuff. And I'm scared of the dark still. I still got a nightlight. When my kids were growing up, that's the first time they really found out that Daddy'd been in a war, when they said, well, why do we need to outgrow our nightlights? Daddy's still got one.
An excerpt from the Vietnam War documentary series by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. Dan Gannon, you were there in the infantry. That must really connect with you. Did you have any similar experiences?
Oh, yes. That was there was a lot of comments like that were similar. Most of our listening posts were two-man, but the same thing, the most scariest time for me, and it's still today, and I have a lot of trauma from it, and that's night operations and night firefights. But for my experience, I don't have a nightlight, but the way I'm able to sleep at all at night is I have a security system, and that is my barbed wire. That's my protection.
You have a security system. That's
yes.
Okay. That's your not actual barbed wire, but a good security system gives you some peace of mind.
Once it gets night, my wife would tell you right today that once I'm at home and it's once it turns dark, the security system goes on. Then I can relax to some degree.
Joe Gasparetti, you served with the U.S. Army 1966-67. This is right when the war is ramping up. We haven't reached our 500,000,
right,
but we're getting there very quickly by the time you arrive in Vietnam, right?
Yeah, we were one of the first heavy units with the 4th Infantry. In fact, we went over by ship, the whole 1st Brigade. And with regard to how the series had affected me, I thought overall it was good once again for Burns and Novick to bring to the attention this seminal age that was so turbulent. Although there are a couple of weaknesses in the series, I don't know if you want me to go into that. But
yeah, go ahead.
Well, the first episode, I give maybe a D. There was just too much history there. In fact, my wife came in the room, and she's watching Burns going back over 100 years with Vietnam history. And she says, is this going to be a history of Vietnam or the history of the American involvement in Vietnam? And Burns lost a wonderful opportunity in that episode. Where I thought he should have started is in 1959, when we lost our first two casualties on the wall. By the way, his segment on the wall was fantastic later on. At any rate, then take us through our involvement in 1975 and give us some highlights with the Americans. And to me, That session was too many Vietnamese voices and faces and not enough of us.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some reactions from our other veterans in the studio here. Let's go to you, Roger Elliott, retired Master Sergeant. You served in Vietnam in 68 through 1970. You were at work, I understand, repairing helicopters, vehicles. You're a Des Moines resident now. Roger, what was your takeaway? What jumped out at you after watching these 18 hours of documentary footage on the Vietnam War?
Okay. In the first place, I liked the first part of the series because I like going back in the history and finding out how we got involved with the Vietnam War, and where it's, you almost have to know that part of it to understand our part of it.
You could have done that in 15 minutes.
All right.
Well, I don't agree with that. But.
No. All right. Wasn't it interesting in that first episode, too, and I think this is an eye-opener to a lot of people, perhaps not to you veterans, but that Ho Chi Minh is explained here, and it's also shown that he honored, he quoted Thomas Jefferson. He thought highly of our Declaration of Independence, Roger.
Yes, it's something that you have to realize that Ho Chi Minh was our comrade in World War II. He fought against the Japanese, and it's just part of the story that needs to be told.
Mm-hmm. Ron Langle, we haven't heard from you yet. You are one in the group here who was drafted. Tell us how you got into Vietnam.
Well, I was in college when the protests are going on, and I didn't agree with that. You know, I thought it was unpatriotic. I always thought we should stand by our government. And I grew up honoring the World War II veterans, and I knew as a little boy on that someday I, too, was going to wear the uniform. And so I allowed myself to be drafted, and I made up my mind that I was going to be a good Army. You know, I would apply myself as hard as I could, and I did very well. The Army was really good for me.
Mm-hmm. And what did you end up doing in Vietnam?
Well, I was a medic, and in that role, I did all kinds of different little things with it. I traveled all throughout the country. I saw downtown Saigon to the upland highlands of the Montagnards, and vast differences of their lifestyles and everything. And I came to appreciate the Vietnamese. I really did.
Mm-hmm. Ron, what part of this documentary, name one part, that really connected with you?
Well, for the biggest part, I was assigned to a team called MEDCAP. It was the acronym for Medical Civil Action Program. And it was supposed to show the Vietnamese, it was a public relations thing, you know, to show that the U.S. Army had compassion and we cared for people and such. And so we cared for the Vietnamese. Then in the series, you know, I saw that probably while I was doing that, at other parts of the country, GIs were setting a flame, you know, the houses and villages and such of people. And I don't know what kind of officer could order his troops to just go ahead and burn down a village and leave children and old people homeless, you know. So that was contradictory to what I was doing, and I didn't like to see that.
We hear and see a lot of things in this documentary that aren't brought out in, I think, traditional documentaries or documentaries about Vietnam that are of a shorter length. Let me play a clip of a recording of President Kennedy. This is after the coup in 1963. And here's recording a rueful account of the coup that has just taken place, toppling the South Korean leader and paving the way for a succession of generals to be our allies in South Korea. This is President Kennedy in 1963.
Monday, November 4th, 1963. Over the weekend, the coup in Saigon took place, culminated 3 months of conversation which divided the government here and in Saigon. I feel that we must bear a good deal of responsibility for it, beginning with our cable of August in which we suggested the coup. I should not have given my consent to it without a roundtable conference. I was The shock by the death of Zim and New, the way he was killed, made it particularly abhorrent. The question now is whether the generals can stay together and build a stable government, or whether public opinion in Saigon will turn on this government as repressive and undemocratic in the not-too-distant future.
President Kennedy recorded in the Vietnam War documentary
series. You know, Ben, that's where it resonated with me. I was a student at the University of Wisconsin in 63 when Zim was assassinated, mm-hmm. and we discussed that. And that
Joe Gasparetti, yeah. just wanted to make sure people knew who
yeah.
they were talking.
And that assassination inflamed part of Vietnam, which made it difficult for us to operate and win the hearts and minds of the people, because he was you'd have to call him anti-Buddhist. He was a Catholic. And, you know, he had such disparate forces. Sometimes I thought we were going over there to save the Vietnamese people from themselves. You had Catholic against Buddhist. You had communist against a Democrat. And then you had the ethnic Vietnamese against the Montagnards. Mm-hmm. And, Ron, I, like you, came to really admire the Montagnards because they were very helpful to us.
Mm-hmm. Dan Gannon, when you hear something like that, John F. Kennedy, in a moment there— regretting the coup that the U.S. helped to engineer in Saigon in 63. Were there other moments here that really opened your eyes to what was going on when we get this backroom look at what the policymakers were doing?
No, not really. And I guess I can say that because I've given a lot of talks regarding the Vietnam War and some of the stuff prior that Roger alluded to. So none of this really was any surprise to me from what, and it might be to a lot of folks that did not know that, but I was completely aware of all those type of incidences that happened through all the five presidents mm-hmm. that were involved with the war.
What about you, Roger Elliott, having served in Vietnam? Did this 18-hour documentary have any surprises for you?
No real surprises to me because I listen to Dan a lot, I guess, and I get a lot of history from Dan. But I'm always interested in it, and he always gives very good speeches. It's something that we need to be aware of. It needs to be the history of the Vietnam War. It's something that we need to be aware of, and unfortunately, we don't seem to learn from our past experiences, and we get in the same situations that we are in today. So The only thing I can say that I did not like about the series is because they kept bringing up that everybody that went over there were high school dropouts and you know, it was like they were not very well educated. And I know a lot of Vietnam veterans that have done real well after they returned home and went into civilian life.
Mm-hmm. Well. The draft, of course, took place. When did the draft start, Joe? Do you happen to know that?
Like Ron, I'm a draftee too, and I was different. I was an older guy. I was 23 years old when they got me.
And you were going to college up to that point.
Yeah, and the reason why they got me, I was in grad school at Wisconsin. I ran out of money, and the levies were so high. A couple months, I was eligible for the draft, and they plucked me off. And Roger said, yeah, I think a lot of the guys I served with were educated. And, you know, with regard to the draftee, and I don't know if Ron has thoughts on this, I thought that the series could have emphasized our role there. There's a very telling statistic. Revisionist historians have questioned the contributions by draftees in that war. 27% of all the guys who served in Vietnam were draftees, but 30% of the fatalities were draftees. So much for our valor.
Mm. Ron, as a draftee from that time, any reaction there?
Yeah, just a little bit. When I was working in operations with other GIs, soldiers, nobody asked if you were enlisted or a draftee. We all worked together, and it just didn't make any difference. You know, we were all comrades.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, among Vietnam veterans, what does this documentary series represent? I know some of you are in tight-knit groups. For sure, you, Dan, in there as the chair of the IO Commission of Veterans Affairs. Did this move the conversation to a place perhaps it hadn't gone in the past?
Well, I'm hoping that this will come out of this whole series, that our Vietnam veterans will not be disrespected. That's one of the fear, because I hear comments and I get a lot of calls and stuff that there was a lot of negative stuff they felt about the Vietnam vet that shouldn't have been brought out. I heard comments that they portrayed the Vietnam vet as more negative. There was a lot of discussion about the North Vietnamese that was more positive. For example, Nguyen Huy. The North Vietnamese is, we were always told, you don't want to get captured by the NVA because it'll be brutal. The VC will be much better. But in Huy, when they left Huy, the North Vietnamese killed over 2,800, and that's not a true statement. They killed over 6,000. So I think it's important that our Vietnam veterans are not treated with any disrespect regarding this. Hopefully not, that they're portrayed. They came back. They served their country with honor and with valor, and hopefully it stays that way. You know, we came home when those of us that were called various names, baby killer, spat on, that didn't come from the soldier. That came from the media. It did not come from us. And the other thing is that I want to say, when someone says we lost the war, we didn't lose the war.
No.
And I hate when they put us that serve in that category. We went and I won every battle I was in.
Yeah.
And we won the war, and we weren't the policymakers. We went and did what we were supposed to do.
Hear, hear. I really appreciate that perception, Dan. And, you know, it was a lack of political will. And the series did bring out, though. And one of the good things, I thought, it was visceral on some of the battle film footage that they had there, especially one with the Battle of the Ayodrang, which I related to because we weren't too far from there in Pleiku with Hal Moore. And I don't know what your perceptions were on the Huy encounter, but I thought that was well done. And from that standpoint, you know, I don't have any misgivings on serving. I don't know about you fellas. Some of the individuals that were portrayed on the show almost became apologetic. And maybe they got their own reasons, but not me, because looking back now, I think as a minimum, we probably saved Thailand because this menace of communism was contained. And, you know, the communists aren't good people because right now they are exterminating the Montagnards, who were our allies in Vietnam.
Okay, we're going to take a break and be back with our four veterans in our studio. Joe Gasparetti, you just heard him. He served in 1966 and 67 in Vietnam with the U.S. Army. Lieutenant Dan Gannon is with us as well. He's also chair now of the Iowa Commission of Veterans Affairs, served as a Marine Corps Infantry Platoon Commander in Vietnam. Ron Langle with us, as well as Roger Elliott. We'll be back in just a moment talking about the Vietnam War documentary series. Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. It's reopened a national conversation about that long, controversial conflict. We'll be back in just a moment to continue our discussion. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We have the great fortune of having four Vietnam veterans in our studios today, sharing their thoughts and their experiences in Vietnam, the new documentary series, The Vietnam War, directed by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. 18 hours, definitely something everyone, veteran, non-veteran, American, non-American, should watch. And we have a little excerpt from that before we get back to our conversation. A lot of the series talking about the strategy the U.S. pursued throughout the 60s, escalating the war in the hopes of bringing the North to the negotiating table much of the time. Rolling Thunder was the title of a gradual and sustained aerial bombardment campaign conducted by the U.S. on North Vietnam. Those who lived during that time will remember that in our news, B-52s and others going over Vietnam, North Vietnam, to bomb there from 1965 to 1968. Here's a conversation, declassified, President Johnson talking to Secretary of Defense McNamara, discussing that strategy by phone. Let's listen.
Things are going reasonably well in the South, aren't they?
Yes, I think so. We think we're taking a heavy toll of them. But it just scares me to see what we're doing there with God knows how many airplanes and helicopters and firepower and going after a bunch of half-starved beggars. This is what's going on in the South, and the great danger is that they can keep that up almost indefinitely. The only thing that'll prevent it, Mr. President, is their morale breaking. There's no question but what the troops in the South, the VC and North Vietnamese, they know that we're bombing in the North, and we just have a free rein. And when they see they're getting killed in such high rates in the South, and they see that the supplies are less likely to come down from the North, I think it'll just hurt their morale a little bit more. And to me, that's the only way to win, because we're not killing enough of them to make it impossible for the North to continue to fight. But we are killing enough to destroy the morale of those people down there if they think it's going to have to go on forever.
All right, go ahead, Bob.
Dan Gannon, Marine Corps Infantry Platoon Commander in Vietnam, now in our studio. What did you think of this bombing campaign, Rolling Thunder, while you were there?
Well, I didn't really have a problem with it. You know, if we should use the maximum firepower that the U.S. has. My issue with the whole thing is we fought the war in the wrong country. We should have been fighting in North Vietnam. Here's a piece of land that's not a whole lot bigger than Iowa. We got 500,000 troops and even about 17% actual infantry. But we should have fought the war in North Vietnam, and I think the war would have been over within a year or two.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. The reason why we didn't, though, we were afraid the Chinese were going to come in, and they were there, Dan. We had units because we were into Cambodia.
And then you have Korea all over again if the Chinese enter the...
Well, that's what they were afraid of. But they had over several hundred thousand advisors, which was brought out in the documentary, already. So the Chinese were there. So I'm with you. I mean, you could have strangled off the and cut off the head of the snake right then if you went to North Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Ron Langle, take us back to your mindset serving in Vietnam in the U.S. Army as a sergeant in 69 and 70. Were you still thinking then that that the communist threat was a worthy reason to be there? The U.S. needed to curb communism?
I had a few doubts. I guess I didn't really believe that communism was going to take over that much. But then again, I thought if it did, you know, we're probably doing the right thing. The domino effect is what was drilled in our heads, that if Vietnam went down, every surrounding nation would go down. Mm-hmm. And in the 60s, you know, we grew up having bomb shelters and this and that, and the Russians are coming and this and that. They pretty much had that drilled in our heads, and so that's kind of what I was living with, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about Vietnam that made it totally different than what the American Army military had ever been in before. There's three things that are really distinctively different about Vietnam. Number one, it was never declared war. It was just a police action. We couldn't go on an offensive. The military couldn't go on offensive drives until they had high command, you know. So only defensive action. That's just wrong. Number two, it was the first time that any conflict had been televised. And so the people back home could see clips of what was going on that would further inflame, you know, the population and the society. And number three, the thing that made it different is that this is the first time the American military had to go into guerrilla warfare. The enemy was underground, whatever. They didn't have distinctive uniforms on like, you know, the Russians had or the German Nazis and such like that. we had to find them in the holes, you know, in the jungles and this and that. There was no line, you know. Other countries, Germany, World War II, World War I, there is a definite line, you know, where the opposition was. We didn't have that in Vietnam, and so we were the first soldiers that had to operate in a warfare that was completely and totally different than what historically had been done. And I think the GIs were just tremendous at that time.
Four Vietnam veterans in our studios today talking about the Vietnam experience and the Vietnam War documentary by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, if you just joined us. Ron Langle there. Roger Elliott with us as well. Joe Gasparetti. Dan Gannon as well. Let's go to our caller in Solon. Wolfgang is with us in Solon. Running out of time. Wolfgang, what's your connection here?
Well, I spent a year in Thailand, Air Force Rescue and Recovery Service, and, you know, there was hardly anything meant. I don't know how many percentage of the people that were affected by the war and people that served there were not even mentioned. They never said anything about that. We evacuated Quang Tri when the North Vietnamese overran the DMZ in 1971. And, you know, I was involved in a combat rescue of shot down pilots in Laos. And you know, it was interesting to me the whole series, but you know, like I say, there was so much stuff that was left out that people probably aren't even aware of.
Right, even in an 18-hour series, yeah. A lot has to be.
That's
left
for
out.
Sure, because a lot of fighter planes who gave us a close air cover came from Thailand.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about your Ron Langle. I know one of the moments you remember most is that some of the duties that you had, you worked as a medic, but you also worked in graves registration. What was that like? What were you doing, first of all?
That was those two words I wish you hadn't brought up, because those are the two things that give me the most anxiety. And it's bothering me right now.
Okay, we don't need to talk about it.
Well, there are bodies that come back to the base camp, and they go into a refrigerated vault, and they're in a body bag. And somebody has to open that body bag. And my part of my duty was with a doctor. We would have to open the bag, try to determine who was in there and cause of death, and start writing a notification of next of kin, that proper paperwork. Sometimes the body was just like the GI was sleeping. There's a simple bullet hole in his chest. But sometimes it was just pieces that were burned in a helicopter, and we couldn't mm-hmm. retrieve the pieces for months or for a long time, and the flies would sit on them, and they'd be covered with maggots, and the stench was terrible. And there's no way you could identify who that was, and you didn't know if all the body parts belonged to one person or a multiple of people. And I know today the MIA thing bothers me very much, because we had some of these people we couldn't identify, so they became listed as missing in action, and they were right in front of us. But with the technology we had at that time, no DNA, that kind of stuff, we just lost some of them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me really sad.
So many mental scars that have to be dealt with among our Vietnam veterans. Joe Gasparetti, you have a very physical scar. You were, I understand, impacted by Agent Orange, the defoliant that was used widely in Vietnam.
Yeah, that was part of the weakness, I thought, of the series, was the aftermath of the war, where the last episode, I think we end with footage in Vietnam. How about bringing us back to the States on how we did for the ensuing years? How about showing us the shoddy care that the VA was giving some of us? How about showing what Ron Kovac did with his work, his gift from We Vets, working with President Bush to give us the American with Disabilities Act, because we had so many crippled Vietnam vets? And the ravages of Agent Orange. I was a prostate cancer victim, and assure you how virulent that stuff was. The Army did a longitudinal study, and those veterans who served in Vietnam compared to other veterans in other parts of the world, we had five times the incidence of prostate cancer amongst other soft tissue diseases. And I hope you three guys are doing okay.
Well, I can say this. This is Dan Gannon. I had, Joe, I had prostate, I had stage 4 cancer. prostate cancer, and I beat it. But I do agree with you with the way the series ended. There were so many issues back home.
Yeah.
Whether it was treatment, you know, whether it was Agent Orange, whether it was post-traumatic stress, a lot of things that could have been talked about there, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more, Dan, Roger, Joe, and Ron, a little bit about leaving Vietnam, what is dealt with at the end of this documentary series. Dan, what do you remember about that? What were your feelings about the U.S. getting out of Vietnam? The late 60s.
I was a very sad, sad time in my life. As far as myself coming home, I really don't want to talk too much about that. But I didn't like the way the war ended. I think we left them, and it wasn't fair. And we should have ended it differently. But it was very sad when they actually came south and took over the embassy, and it portrayed us as a complete loss. And that was a very bad time for me.
Roger Elliott, I understand that you watched this documentary series. You went to a screening in Johnson with two South Vietnamese officers and a couple of American officers?
Yes. Actually, Dan was up on stage, and it was very interesting. We saw the viewpoints of the Americans and the South Vietnamese, and the South Vietnamese pretty much thought we deserted them, and we did. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it was like a punch in the gut to me at the time, because I saw the UE helicopters getting thrown off the aircraft carriers. And we put our lives on the line for those UE helicopters. And yeah, to see them being destroyed like that, more or less the people of the country being destroyed like that, just did not go over well with me.
You know, Roger, with the central importance of the helicopter, don't you think we could have had one episode on the importance of helicopters alone in that war, don't you think?
Well, I've got a lot of feedback from a lot of my Vietnam friends, and everybody says there's something they could have done more.
And they're
all different. It's just it's an opinion.
When you talk with your other Vietnam veteran friends about this series, what is the consensus about where it takes us? What was the value of having this in-depth series in 2017, more than 40 years after the fall of Saigon?
A lot of them were like I was when I saw it. I enjoyed this series. It hurt. I was embarrassed in some parts of it. But it was something that needed to be seen, and for the whole country to see, be able to see. Now, I've talked to some veterans that said they watched three or four episodes and said they couldn't watch anymore.
Mm-hmm. Dan, did you find that? Because you have a lot of contact with a lot of different veterans. I'm sure Vietnam veterans out there who didn't watch the series.
Yes, there were some that didn't watch the series or watched an episode. Some of them, it was too painful. Some of it, they did not like at all. Some of the comments, one thing that I just want to bring up that I thought was misleading is the atrocities in Vietnam. I served in two different battalions, wounded two different divisions and the Marines, and we never had any atrocities. We never went out of our way to burn villages down, just to burn villages down to create people to suffer. So
yeah,
I think that was a misleading, because that's where a lot of the negative things that happened to Vietnam vets when they came home.
Let alone all the sea rations, Dan and Roger and Ryan, that we gave to the kids who came out of the bush with no clothes on.
Oh, yeah.
Candy.
Yeah.
Candy and gum.
Yeah.
I wonder, as we talk the final minutes of this hour, what can we take away from the Vietnam War experience that is relevant for what our country is experiencing today? What are the thoughts on that?
Well, I'll give you one thought. This is Dan again. I just hope we don't get into a quagmire in the Mideast, and I can see that happening, where it just goes on and on, and then we have to step away from it with no gain. So, and I think we're headed for a quagmire in the Mideast. I'm not sure how we're going to solve that because of the terrorism that we're trying to control there.
Mm-hmm.
The one opinion that I always have carried.
This is Ron, right?
Yeah, this is Ron. Sorry. The one opinion I've carried for a long, long time is that I, I sometimes wonder if the Pentagon sees a GI as a human being who has a mother, father, brother, sister, or family.
Right.
And sometimes I think we get considered to be tools, and if a tool breaks, we just get a different one. You know, like going to the hardware store and get a broken screwdriver replaced. And so I hope that we have a society, a Pentagon, a military, who takes American lives as utmost of importance.
Mm-hmm. Other takeaways here?
Yeah, I mean, since Korea, the one constant is that America, really, if you want to look at it, hasn't been at war, but its military always has. And to echo some of the things that Dan and Roger mentioned, unless the country is prepared to have more than 1% of the population to represent our military forces, we have to have a greater buy-in if we want to continue these wars. Otherwise, what's the sense? Mm-hmm. I really sympathize with my contemporary brothers and sisters who've had multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. And for their physical and psychological welfare, I don't think we can continue to do this.
Vietnam was a big change in terms of how our society viewed its government and the trust in the government. I wonder, what is your comment on that? Will we ever regain trust in the leadership in Washington? That's where it was broken, wasn't it, Dan, in Vietnam?
Yes, it was. And as I said earlier, you know, the soldier went to, and the Marines went to fight a war because they were trained to go do that. And we were not, and that's where you can't blame us, because we went there to do what we were told. And we were hoping our leaders were making the right decisions and being truthful with us. And so anything that's lost or any of that type of issues really comes with the policymakers and those that are making those decisions. And hopefully that'll be fixed. But I don't know. That's a big question based on what one saw in the Vietnam series.
Mm-hmm. This is Roger here, and I was in Iraq 10 years ago. And the big difference between Iraq and Vietnam is, well, in the first place, when we went to Iraq, the Vietnam veterans were there to see us all. And when we came back, they were there to meet us at the plane.
What did that mean to you, Roger?
Mm-hmm. Very much. It moved me very much. Mm-hmm. And not only the Vietnam veterans, when we went through Atlanta, any time we came home on leave or whatever, people stand up and salute us.
What does a Vietnam vet have to talk about with a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan? Where does that overlap?
I remember when the 133rd came back here to Iowa City, and I was there to welcome them. And just like Roger's experience, just because we were shamefully received by the American public when we came home, I wasn't going to do that to our fellow patriots in arms. So I was glad. What you do, you say, I'm glad you served. I'm glad you're back with us. And I hope we can come to the end of all the travails that you've gone through.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple minutes left. Any takeaways that you would say those who haven't seen this series, haven't studied Vietnam, should keep in mind about the Vietnam experience from this series or from other research that you've done? What is the final thoughts you want to leave our audience with?
This is Ron. I guess if you have had a loved one who has passed away who was a Vietnam veteran and you could never really understand the actions of that veteran, that maybe if you would watch that documentary, you'd get some enlightenment and a little bit of understanding about what your loved one went through.
Okay.
This is Dan. I think my takeaway is we got to continue to talk about our experiences in the sacrifices, because once we quit talking about them, it'll all be forgotten.
Dan Gannon, thank you for coming into our studio along with Roger Elliott, Ron Langle, and Joe Gasparetti for Iowa Veterans, talking about the Vietnam War documentary by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. And we're going to go out with a little music before we got started with this conversation. Joe, you and I were talking, and I asked, what is the one song that you have that will bring back that time for you that represents it? And you said what?
We got to get out of this place by the animals. Yeah. You guys agree?
Or leaving on a jet plane.
That's a good one, too.
Okay. Joe, you called it even an anthem.
Yeah.
An anthem.
The
All
animals,
right.
Yeah.
We'll go out with that tune and want to thank you again for your service to our country, for sharing this experience, very painful experience in many cases, but we appreciate you coming and sharing your thoughts. River to River is produced by Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
People tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty. And one thing I know is true. You'll be dead before your time is due. I know. Watch my daddy in bed and crying. Watch his hand been turning gray. He's been working and slaving his life away. Oh, yes, I know. He's been working so hard. Mom's been working too, baby. Every night and day.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Me and you.